Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to be back with you today after yesterday's NPR special coverage of the House impeachment of President Trump. First time that a president has been impeached twice. As you just heard on NPR News, the Senate trial will be after the presidency transitions to Joe Biden. Later this hour, we want to hear what you want to see in the first couple of months, 2-3 months of the Biden administration. What do you think the top priorities should be? What do you want to see happen? We'll take your calls later this hour. But we begin with the latest on Capitol Hill with NPR senior editor and correspondent Ron Elving. Ron, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, good to be with you, Larry.
So a remarkable day yesterday. I'm just curious first on your personal reflection of what it was like for you to be part of the coverage yesterday versus what it was like the first time President Trump was impeached.
Well, that's the first time that question's ever been asked about any kind of a president. It's always been a one-time event. And so it was radically different, really, because the debate in the House the first time President Trump was impeached was rather, well, let us say, complicated. And it involved a telephone call that very few people had had any opportunity to hear, and that the members of Congress were relying on secondary and tertiary sources to know anything about. So the debate over that Ukraine phone call and everything that President Trump did to pressure the Ukrainians to investigate the Bidens, that was all a little bit difficult for people to follow. But everybody present in the Capitol for that event yesterday had been there a week earlier. They all knew exactly what it felt like to have the building invaded by a mob that was threatening at least some of those members of Congress quite directly and by name. And so there were witnesses, there were plenty of witnesses, there were hundreds of witnesses present and voting yesterday on the question of whether or not the president had incited that mob.
I was curious because it felt different listening to it and watching it yesterday than it did with the previous impeachment of President Trump. So I was curious. And yes, that personal part of it really came through for those of us that were watching 3,000 miles away.
It should have, because this was so real and you could hear it in the voices of the members, even the people who were defending, in a sense, the president, or at least opposing impeachment of the president. They might not have been saying too much about what the president did on January 6th. They were much more inclined to talk about either the future, let's let this go, let's move on, let's country. Or they were inclined to talk about things that the president had done in the past that they actually liked. Or they talked about process, or they talked about whether or not there should have been hearings before they actually voted on impeachment. But they did not attempt to defend what the president did and said on January 6th. That was not at issue.
Ron, we're going to have a trial of the president after he's no longer the president. I saw that there was a case, actually, of a cabinet member who I think was during the Grant administration who was impeached the day he left office. And they had a trial and he was acquitted in the Senate after he left office. But for a president, obviously, this will be the first. What is the sense of the potential the president could be convicted and therefore ineligible to run for high office again?
Correct. That is really the remaining question. The Senate, we don't know yet where the votes are, but I don't think anyone is predicting at this point that the necessary votes would take 17 Republicans. The necessary votes are probably not there yet. But, and this is a big but, even Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, who will be at that point when the debate begins in January, the week of January 25th, he will be the minority leader instead of the majority leader, because Kamala Harris will break the tie and make the Democrats the majority. But they'll still need 17 Republican votes. And Mitch McConnell is leaving open the possibility that his would be one of them, that he wants to hear the evidence. What that tells us is that Mitch has been given some reason to believe there's more information to come out. it won't just be everyone's memory of the mob breaking into the building. There will be more information about what the president's role might have been. There is going to be more information about what some of the rioters actually did while they were in the Capitol, and that all of that could very well affect the judgment of at least a dozen, maybe a dozen and a half, Republican senators, possibly including Mitch McConnell.
Well, and this is obviously fraught for Republicans who are concerned about having supporters of the president, which is the majority of Republican voters at this point, and still appears that's the case, turning on them in their reelection efforts and being trumped in the primary, so to speak. But on the other hand, this is an opportunity for them to remove Donald Trump from the playing field for the election in 4 years. And so you suspect this is what they're weighing, the possible blowback from Republican voters in their districts versus the chance to reclaim the party from Trump.
Yes, that is very much on their minds. Now, for perhaps half a dozen of these Republican senators, the consideration is quite personal. They themselves would love to run in 2024 if Donald Trump is not running. They're probably much less inclined to run if he is. So it is a very personal vote for them. Will they clear the field for themselves to run as the pro-Trump, post-Trump figure in 2024? I can't see how, let us say, a Ted Cruz or a Josh Hawley could vote to him to actually remove Trump's, not he will be out of office, but remove him as a potential 2024 candidate by barring him for life. If they were to cast that vote, they would be kissing off any chance for any residual and remaining Trump supporters in 2024. So one would suspect it would have to come from people who don't expect to run so soon as 2024. There might be people who would like to see the party change, like to see Donald Trump expunged, and then possibly have ambitions in the direction of running for national office 8 years from now or 12 years from now.
We're talking with NPR's Ron Elving. You heard him on the coverage of the impeachment, senior editor and correspondent. And Ron, I take it you'll be part, a central part of the coverage next Wednesday at the inauguration.
We've just been talking about that in the past hour. We're getting some information from the inaugural committee, getting some information about what can survive in the midst of the pandemic, and of course also these threats of violence. And so you obviously are not going to see anything like what you saw in 2008 when Barack Obama took the oath for the first time and people flooded the National Mall all the way down to the Lincoln Memorial, a throng never seen before or since.
Well, that was before Donald Trump had the biggest ever turnout.
Well, that was a large crowd. It wasn't anywhere near as large as Obama's.
I'm sorry, I digress. Go
it right. was large. I do understand that you're being ironic, because he did make such a big deal of it in the face of all the facts and all the photographs and all of the official counts. But nonetheless, it was a big crowd. It was a respectable crowd. We won't see anything like that. The mall is going to be closed. There are only going to be tickets for members of Congress and one other person, so they can bring their spouse or their mother or whomever they want to bring. And they are going to sit in those risers that you saw the protesters on last Wednesday, next Wednesday. They're going to be sitting in those risers, reconstructed, of course, and that's going to be it. We aren't going to see, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of people out on the mall. It's just going to be the crowd at the Capitol on those risers, on those bleachers, and it's going to be a relatively modest affair. It may be quite cold. We've seen very cold inauguration days where they went ahead and had it outdoors. They've only had it indoors once, and that was the second Reagan inauguration when it was literally sub-zero. So we expect it to be outside. We expect there to be just that very limited group of people watching, and we're expecting there to be, as everyone has said, more armed federal officers and police officers and National Guard than there have ever been before, and more, in fact, than we have troops in Afghanistan.
I keep thinking about the great performance by Aretha Franklin. I was so glad she was from Detroit, so she knew cold, at least, with her singing. We're talking with NPR's Ron Elving, joining us on Air Talk. Ron, we've been led to believe there'll be a significant virtual portion of the inauguration with people around the country taking part. Do we know what form that will take?
It's going to be like what we got used to with the Democratic National Convention and to some degree the Republican National Convention. We're going to zoom to all different parts of the country and have people participate. We'll hear bands. We'll hear music of other kinds. We'll hear greetings and remarks from people around the country that might, under other circumstances, have literally been in the Capitol. There will not be the traditional parade, which is a shame. It's something that people, I think, get a big kick out of, not only in Washington, but people like to watch parades on television. But there's going to be an effort to provide that kind of energy. And then, of course, that night, in lieu of the usual inaugural balls, there will be a televised extravaganza hosted by Tom Hanks with a great number of featured performers that will be familiar to certainly everyone in Southern California.
We're talking with NPR's Ron Elving on AirTalk. We have more political analysis to come this hour, but I do want to remind you, later in the hour, we're just going to open up the phones and talk, and I want to hear from you what you want to see in the first 3 months, 100 days, they often call it, of the incoming administration. What do you want to see Joe Biden and his team accomplish during that time? What clear priorities do you want to see set by the Biden administration right off the bat, immediately following Inauguration Day, which is next Wednesday? That's coming up later this hour on Air Talk. And of course, you'll hear all the live coverage from NPR on Inauguration Day. To the best of my knowledge, that's going to be starting around 6 in the morning. So it'll be very early during what is typically morning edition here. You'll be hearing the Inauguration Day special coverage. And there's a chance we may be on the air right after that, and we can take calls and talk about the experience of the inauguration. That's next Wednesday right here on KPCC. Ron, I did want to ask you about President-elect Biden's COVID-19 plans, because we understand he's going to lay out a significant program for coronavirus relief. Do we know what that's going to be?
We're going to hear a great deal more about it tonight. My understanding is he's going to be speaking at what would be 4:15 Pacific time, 7:15 in Delaware, and he's going to lay out how they hope to speed the delivery of all of these vaccine doses. I know there are major cities in America where they've only gotten a few hundred doses at this point. It's shameful. We don't know if the problem is entirely a matter of distribution or if there aren't as many doses getting into the stream as expected. But it does appear that the decision of the Trump administration to back off and let the states severally and individually try to organize all of this down to the local areas has not worked particularly well, and that we would expect the Biden administration to have a more centralized approach, to take more responsibility for dealing with the virus as a national problem. And we expect to hear more about that tonight.
All right, Ron, thank you as always. We appreciate it and look forward to your continuing coverage of this period of transition in the presidency. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Ron Elving, senior editor, correspondent for NPR News. I want to talk about the security measures that are in place and going into place in Washington, as well as in Sacramento at our state capitol, because the FBI sent out an alert to all states saying that they should be prepared for the potential of armed violence at state capitals. With us is CEO of Global Risk Intelligence and Planning, Hal Kempfer. He's a retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel and worked in military support for Homeland Security. Hal, it's so good to have you with us. Is the Secret Service going to be the lead agency for the inauguration?
Larry, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, the Secret Service actually has the lead for any national security special event. And, of course, the inauguration is a national security special event, which is a special designation that literally goes back to the Clinton administration. They have the lead. They coordinate with all the agencies, federal, state, local, even private sector. So they actually have a very well-defined process that they use in doing this. However, what is a change since the attack on the Capitol is they have expanded the duration of the NSSC starting on the 19th and going to the 21st. So literally the Capitol is going to be locked down for about 3 or 4 days to make sure that the zone is a little bit safer than it would be, say, have been in the past.
So we're used to inaugurations having on the periphery protesters. And in this case, I mean, if this were a typical inauguration, you'd expect there would be the kinds of protesters, nonviolent, that we've seen, you know, previous times. It sounds like for people who are going to go to D.C. with the idea of protesting, there's not necessarily going to be a place for them, will there?
They're not going to get anywhere near the mall. They have got 20,000 troops down the mall, plus all the mutual aid from all the surrounding states with law enforcement. When they say that the mall is in lockdown, that is not an understatement. Basically, you won't see any protests there. My guess, if I was doing this, is and looking at how you bring up National Guard and various different statuses, is it'll be tough to even get into the D.C. area. I would imagine there'll be a lot of checkpoints. I don't see anybody crossing the 14th Street Bridge, for example, to get into the mall or any of the other bridges. I think there'll be a lot of checkpoints, a lot of control, and they're going to push the perimeter out in a gradation form. You know, where the inauguration is taking place, that'll be a highly secure zone, and then there'll be lesser secure zones going out. But all of it is basically to put intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance on anybody out there, and then to put in gradually increasing barriers to winnow out potential threats as you get closer and closer to the mall area.
Hal, when we come back, I want to ask you about something that's not quite clear to me, having to do with the potential extent of the planning of the attack on the U.S. Capitol last Wednesday. You're listening to Air Talk, or I should say a week ago yesterday. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Later this hour, what do you want to see from the incoming Biden administration during its first few months in office? We'll talk with you about that later on, but Hal Kempfer, security expert, joins us. We'll be back in 1 minute. Looking forward to hearing the conversation with director Paul Greengrass, such a gifted filmmaker. That's on Fresh Air at noon today here on KPECC. We're with you until noon today, and tomorrow at 11 o'clock, it's Film Week. Our critics have a lot of films to review, including MLK, FBI, a documentary based on newly declassified files on the U.S. government's surveillance of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That, of course, coming out on this MLK weekend. MLK, FBI, the documentary, and we'll hear about that from our critics tomorrow on Film Week here on KPECC. Right now, we're talking about the security measures being undertaken at the U.S. Capitol, as well as what's anticipated in Sacramento at our beautiful state capitol there. Hal, what do you anticipate will be going on with the Capitol Police, perhaps Highway Patrol, and local officers in the greater Sacramento area?
Well, Highway Patrol, years back, actually took over security for the state capitol. So Highway Patrol will be the lead and is the lead for coordinating all the security around there. You're going to see a smaller version of what you see in Washington, D.C. They'll secure the perimeter around the Capitol. I imagine there'll be barriers. They'll probably be blocking off streets. It's basically going to shut it down. With that said, I would hope they're doing what we call red teaming, which is they have a dedicated group that is basically playing the threat, thinking like the threat would, you know, getting into their mindset, their tactics, techniques, procedures, and looking at where they might attack, because what they may see is that we're focused on the capitals themselves, which is obvious because we had the national capital attacked, they may be looking at secondary, tertiary targets that are not as well defended that would basically meet their goals and objectives. And it wouldn't necessarily be physical destruction. It could be an attack of what we call weapons of mass disruption. For example, shutting down airports or freeways, things like that. So there's a lot of considerations that they need to go through in their planning process.
And this gets to the issue of planning of the insurrection of the U.S. Capitol 9 days ago, because I've heard reports that this was in the planning, and you know, we know there was the person with zip ties and plans to, you know, potentially harm members of Congress. But on the other side, we had reports that, you know, people getting into the building, they seemed to be kind of confused, didn't know where they were going, seemed surprised that they so easily got into the building as they did. So what do we understand here about the degree to which this was a planned attack?
Well, Larry, looking at the attack, and I looked at it pretty closely, it was obvious. Now, within a larger protest event, you're going to have a lot of people there who are just there to protest, and some of them are just going to be, you know, they're just going to come along with where everybody's going. They're just going to follow them along. They're caught up in the moment, and they'll enter the Capitol, and they'll wander around because they have no idea what they're doing. But with that, you saw what we call a core cadre that appeared to have a very good idea of where they're going. I would not be surprised if, in fact, I am pretty sure that they had gone through that area physically before, surveilled it, walked through the area, walked through their plan, and they knew which offices they were going to, they knew which doors they were going to go to, and they were not in any way confused. They had a plan of attack, and that had probably been the works for some time. You don't show up with all the stuff they have, particularly the zip ties, unless you know what you're doing. And it just looked like there were a few in the crowd, looking at all the videos, that were very well prepared, had a very clear idea of what they were doing. So I would imagine you had a military-style planning process that had been in the works for some time with that core cadre that was within the larger protest.
And then you suspect there were some others, opportunists, who once they saw people were getting in, who followed the people who had planned to do this all along?
I think they just came along with the crowd. They saw this, they were opportunistic, they said, hey, look where we're going. You know, they busted through the barricades. And that's not uncommon. We see that in large protest events around the world, that there will always be some, they're caught up in the passion of the moment, if you will, and they roll in there, but they weren't part of a coordinated plan, if you will, so much as maybe the planners figured they would come in, but they didn't know it. They were just being basically urged. In some cases, they're actually urged to come along, and there'll be people placed in the crowd that will kind of guide them to go a certain direction. Also, when you have a lot of people coming in like that, that's part of the plan, is to overwhelm them. And you're trying, and if you're an attacker, you want to hide within that crowd as long as you possibly can. You don't want to set yourself apart where you could be identified by those providing security. So you want to bring them with you in order to camouflage what you're doing.
Al, I know you have a television appointment, but I just have one more question for you, and that is, you know, we know with the tragedies of school shootings and terrorist events that there is often a copycat element, or when there's one, there are others, because it sort of gets into people's minds, and we have the example. Given the success of the attackers last week who got into the U.S. Capitol building, do you anticipate that is energizing others intending to do harm to do similar type things?
I think the nature of this is not like ISIS or Al-Qaeda per se. It does have some elements of what we call homegrown violent extremists, where they will look for what other attacks did and they come up with their own plans. There are going to be some out there within those who are upset about the election who will look at this and say, now that's a really good idea. And they will come up with their own plan, and it may not be a Capitol building. It may be a county building. It could be, you know, if I was at Fox Studios right now, I would say you might want to upgun your security a little bit. If I was at YouTube headquarters or Twitter, I would be doing the same thing. There's a lot of other places that they might pick as a possible target to try and go in there and do something akin to what we saw in the Capitol.
Hal, thank you for joining us. Let's hope that doesn't happen, and that we have a safe and orderly inauguration next Wednesday. But thank you so much for being with us to talk about the potential here.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. I hope so, too.
Hal Kempfer, CEO of Global Risk Intelligence and Planning, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel. Let's get back to political analysis. Joining us is UCLA Professor of Political Science and Chicano Studies, Matt Barreto, who was a member of the Biden campaign directing their Latino polling and their messaging research. He's the co-founder of the political consulting firm LD Insights. Professor Barreto, good to have you with us again. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Happy New Year.
Thanks. So your thoughts about what we're going to be seeing with the Senate, you know, coming back post-inauguration and trying President Trump, what do you anticipate we'll see?
Well, I think it's very important that the Senate takes this seriously. And with the new Senate under Democratic majority, I think you're going to see exactly that. Even if Trump is out of office at this point, there are still extremely important precedents to set here in terms of the rejection of this behavior. And from all of the discussion that we've already seen in the news and the discussions that I'm having behind the scenes and hearing, there are numerous Republican senators who are willing to vote for impeachment. Can they get up to the two-thirds that they need is going to be the question. But if they take it seriously, I think that you will see people, balance the arguments and really reflect on just how awful these events of January 6th were. So that's going to be out of the gates. That's going to be on the challenge, the task of the Senate. It'll be extremely important for our country to get that right.
Matt, setting aside the moral and ethical issues, which sadly often happens in politics, looking this just from a strategic political standpoint, wouldn't it be better for Democrats to have the president acquitted in the Senate so that there is the specter of him for the election in 4 years, that he further is disruptive in the Republican Party, makes it difficult for other candidates to establish themselves for fear of alienating Trump supporters? Wouldn't it be better for Democrats if he's still a factor in 4 years?
Well, I think he's going to be a factor, whether it's, Donald Trump Sr. as a candidate or his movement. He's definitely going to be a factor. You've already seen that with supporters like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz in the Senate. They're going to continue go down defending him and continuing to inflame that base. And the Republican Party is continuing to have this internal strife that started when Donald Trump came into the presidency and the campaign in 16. It did go underground in that he was able to bring all of the Republicans, Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio, who had bitterly fought him in the 2016 campaign, came eagerly on board. And now you're seeing that split apart again. So I think you're going to see that from a political perspective. You're going to see that continue to play out, that jockeying for position within the Republican Party to see what Cruz and Hawley do, to see what Donald Trump Jr. does. Does he try to continue to give speeches and barnstorm the country, inflaming these passions? So that's going to probably continue. And then it's going to see, what does Mitch McConnell do? Does he finally stand up? Does Mitt Romney perhaps emerge once again as a voice of reason and moderation within the Republican Party? There are certainly those who want to put this behind them. But I don't think that this this fight is going away anytime soon within the Republican ranks.
We're talking with UCLA Professor of Political Science, Matt Barreto, also with us from Claremont McKenna College, Visiting Assistant Professor of Government and Co-Director of the CMC Policy Lab, Zach Corser. Professor, good to have you with us again. Zach, your thoughts about the Republican Party and this damned if you do, damned if you don't when it comes to the Senate trial?
Yeah, it's an emerging question for sure. I think Mitch McConnell holds a lot of the cards right now. He's made it clear that he's not going to make any extraordinary effort to move up how quickly this trial could run. You know, we've seen extraordinary speed in the House of Representatives. You know, comparing to the last impeachment that took 3 months to get out of the House, you know, they did it in a few days. The Senate could do so as well if Mitch McConnell wanted them to. We've looked already at incoming majority leader Chuck Schumer saying that if he had the agreement of Mitch McConnell, they could change this idea that the next time the Senate could be in session was the 19th. They could do it immediately if they considered it an emergency. McConnell has said no to that. However, he's also been playing, I don't think you could describe it as anything else, somewhat coy in the sense that he has not walked back any indication that he is not pleased by the fact that Donald Trump has been impeached. He seems to have lost Donald Trump's phone number. They're not talking right now. And I think he's either pursuing a strategy of wait and see, or I think he has a plan, and he often does. My guess, looking at his past behavior and looking at the constitutionality, he may, moving forward, let's say, when he loses the majority, when the Georgia elections are certified and Schumer takes over and Trump has left office, simply say, this isn't constitutional, you can't impeach a former president. That's an open question. There's some precedent to show that it could happen, that is to say, Senate impeachment trials of former officers. But I think there's some political strategy playing out here. What the consequences of that will be for Republicans moving forward, I think it's a moving target.
We're talking with Zach Corser and Matt Barreto, both professors at CMC and UCLA, respectively. Zach, before I let you go, how important is the inauguration as a national reset next Wednesday?
Well, I mean, it's vitally important. It is, symbolically and legally, the transition between one administration and the other. We've seen, unfortunately, you should think of the federal government as this enormous ship, and it just can't turn around on a dime. And that's why we have in law lots of ways in which the incoming administration can have time to make plans and hire and take over from the last administration. And all that has been short-circuited politically and logistically. And so, symbolically, it's vitally important, but I think some real damage has been done. I mean, we now have D.C. occupied by security forces, and the imagery is very poor moving forward. I hope that the televised event has the same kind of success that the televised national party events did during the summer. But, I don't know. I think the damage has been done in many ways, and I don't know that we'll feel the same kind of uplift and the same kind of normalcy in this inauguration, unfortunately, that we've seen in others.
Professor Corser, as always, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Professor Barreto, a final thought from you about what are going to be the priorities of the incoming administration. We're going to ask listeners momentarily what they want to see. What do you think is likely to come from the administration in those first 100 days?
Well, I think out of the gates, they need to continue to take up economic recovery. They need to take up distribution of the COVID vaccine. And so those are the national priorities. We've already seen slow rollouts of the current COVID vaccine, some states complaining they haven't got enough, other states complaining they have too much that they can't use. So that has to go correct. And there could be some legislative solutions and directions to that. But most importantly is probably the economic recovery. There was a very partial extension of unemployment and stimulus benefits at the end of the year. We need something significant that goes to state and local governments, that goes to different administrations, that goes to different agencies, and that goes directly to people and small business owners. And so that is probably at the top of the agenda in terms of getting this country back on track. We really can't tackle a lot of the other issues until the economic recovery is there. The final thing that I'll put on, though, that should be looming is a revised Voting Rights Act, is an improved Voting Rights Act. As listeners probably know, the Supreme Court back in 2013 set aside about half of the Voting Rights Act. Courts have been whittling it down. There is such discussion over everything from voter fraud to voter suppression. And this is an opportunity. Perhaps, Larry, with our newest senator from California, who is an expert in election administration, Alex Padilla, for the Congress to take up some voting rights equality so that each state and each person has an equal right to vote, and that we do have those checks and balances in place. And so I think that's a policy issue that looms and will help the national narrative if they have that confidence that our government and our federal government has created some voting standards of equality.
Thank you so much, Professor Barreto. We appreciate your being with us again. Have a good rest of the week.
All right, Larry, thanks for your coverage of this.
Thank you. Matt Barreto, UCLA, professor of political science and Chicano studies. He was also an advisor to the Biden campaign. He directed their Latino polling and their messaging research and co-founder of the political consulting firm LD Insights. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. So the phones are open for you right now. What do you want to see from the incoming Biden administration in its first 3 months or so? 866-893-KPCC. 866-893-5722. What should the priorities be legislatively, tonally coming from the White House, organizationally? You can pick the area that you want to focus on, but what do you want to see from incoming President Biden's administration? 866-893-5722. We'll be back in 90 seconds.